Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It is Mac and Parkins on The Score, and we are thrilled to welcome the perfect guest for Score Stories. We bring on guests just to tell stories because there are no games during these odd times of quarantine. So we welcome on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline the only quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl for the Bears, Jim McMahon, on The Score. Jim, how you doing today?
Doing great, guys. How's it going?
Jimmy Mac, it is great to have you on. Thanks so much. As Danny just mentioned, man, we haven't had games for 7 weeks, so it's cool to get some of the more popular guys in our city's sports history on board, and I'm really happy your son, Sean, who listens, hooked this up for us. How you feeling, man? How's everything going? Let's start with your head. How's everything there?
Well, it's been bothering me quite a bit lately, but I can't get to New York to see my guy for a while. So other than that, my body's been feeling pretty good. I had a bunch of stem cells put in December. I had about $275 million implied in both shoulders, both elbows, both knees, in my neck. Had an IV of them, and also they put them in my spinal column. So my body's actually feeling pretty good.
Good. So you don't wake up every morning wondering which part is going to be hardest to get out of bed?
Oh, no, it still hurts, but it feels a lot better than it did.
Yeah.
My shoulders especially. I don't sleep well because every time I move, it wakes me up. So, but other, you know, just, you know, I've been working in my yard the last 2 months, you know, just killing time, can't go anywhere. So getting a lot of stuff, you know, done around the house, and I've only played golf, I think, once in the last 3 months. And it's over 100 degrees here already, so it's a little too hot to be doing anything else outside.
Yeah. My little brother lives in Phoenix, and he's told me it's already hit 100. So you've played golf once. I mean, you are feeling well enough to get out there. How many rounds a year do you typically play, Jim?
I've never counted them, but well, you know, I've had so many events canceled since January or February. As far as I know, the Lake Tahoe event is still going to happen. I'm looking forward to that, but everything else seems to be getting pushed back into the fall. So, yeah, I couldn't even tell you how many rounds. I do a lot of different charity events and all over the country, up in Canada as well. So it's been fun.
I want you to meet my little buddy, Danny Parkins, who was conceived during Super Bowl 20.
Thanks, Mac, for the intro. Yeah, Jim, it's
must
true.
Must have been during the second half when it was over, at the end of the first half.
Yeah, you guys were just kicking the Patriots' ass so much. At halftime, my parents just they decided to make it a little bit more interesting.
Beautiful.
So I guess thank you is in order. I have to thank you. This is kind of weird.
Well, you don't need to thank me. I didn't do anything.
Okay.
Well, as far as your birth's concerned, it is.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it was a closer game, there might have been stresses there, and who knows if it never happened. So I guess I'll thank you. I didn't think I'd be thanking you, but that's how Mac brought it up. So. I was told, by the way, at those golf events that the way to spot where Jim McMahon was on the driving range was to look for the guy without shoes. Do you golf without shoes?
I do golf without shoes, but I'm usually not on the driving range.
Oh, okay.
I don't like the range much. I warm up with some Coors Lights, and that's good enough.
Why no shoes on the golf course?
I had too many fat ass linemen stepping on my feet in cleats for 15 years. So.
All right.
My feet hurt. even when people I golf with say, "Man, what's wrong with your feet?" They've been stepped on a lot, and the right ankle sticks out really far, and that's been busted a couple times. So shoes don't really fit well anyway. So, you know, if I'm not playing golf, I'm usually in flip-flops.
Let's talk about some of those fat-ass linemen. Going back to Brigham Young, how happy were you? And I bet you reached out to Andy Reid, your college teammate, after he finally got the monkey off his back and won a Super Bowl. You guys go back a long way, and he coached you as well along your path.
Oh, yeah, Andy and I I think we've known each other since 1978, maybe 77, my freshman year. But, yeah, Andy came in. He was one of our tackles, and he's a hell of an athlete, hell of an athlete. And he was only about, I think he weighed maybe 270, 275 in college. And then I saw him when he was the head coach in Philadelphia. He had to have been 400 pounds then. And I told him, I wish you were this big in college. It would have taken a little bit longer to get around your big ass. But yeah, I've kept up with Andy. I text him during the playoff games and of course after the Super Bowl, and he's well deserved. He's a hell of a guy, hell of a coach. I was very impressed with his coaching style when he was with the Packers, and I was there. He was coaching our tight ends at the time, and then he got promoted to quarterback coach, and that's the year that I retired. And he called me. He said, "Hey, come on, you got to come back and help me with Favre." And I said, "I was just helping you for a year and a half with Favre." I said, "I promised my daughter when she got to high school I'd quit, so I'm done." But, yeah, I'm glad to see him finally have that success there.
What do you remember?
Success everywhere, just not just hasn't won a Super Bowl.
What do you remember about the helping Favre process?
I know he jumped on my scooter every day after practice to get a ride back to the stadium, so I was helping him there. But for the most part, I just, you know, you didn't have to help him. I mean, that offense was pretty self-explanatory. I mean, we had great players around him, good skilled guys, and Holmgren, I thought, was a hell of a coach. So, you know, Mike would yell at me sometimes, you know, when Brett would throw an interception. He's like, "Why did he do that?" I'm like, "Hell, you've been here with him for 4 years. I just got here. I don't know why he did it." But, you know, he would do some things that he couldn't explain, but then he'd also do some things that you couldn't explain either on the good side. So he was just a gunslinger, man. He had a, you know, he was a tough guy and just loved to play the game. I mean, he's still playing the guy. I see him on these Copperfield commercials. He's still out there with these young kids messing around. So
he's got a good arm in the commercials.
It was a fun year and a half with him.
So you and Brett got along?
Oh yeah, we got along fine. Late in the games, home group to say, "You want to get in there?" I go, "No." I said, "He started, let him finish this." the same at the Super Bowl. He says, you want to go in and play?" I said, "Hey, man, I'm not mopping up for anybody." I said, "Give the other kid a chance." And that other kid was Doug Peterson, who's now the head coach of the Eagles. So I said, "I'm sure he'll get a thrill out of it." But I said, "I'm not mopping up."
We're talking to Jim McMahon here on The Score. Before we had you on, we were talking about how if you just like Google and search pictures of Jim McMahon, there are so many classic ones. And you mentioned the Super Bowl with the Packers. There's that trip that you guys take to the White House, and there's Favre and Reggie White and everyone. They're all in suits and ties. And there's you in the back in a Bears jersey with the Packers. And I know the reason was because the 85 team didn't get to go to the White House right afterwards because of the Challenger tragedy. But did your Packers teammates accept that explanation, or were they pissed that you were wearing a Bears jersey?
No, I had talked to all of them before, prior to going down there. I said, "Look, you know," I explained the situation, and I had talked to some of my linemen from Chicago, and I said, "Hey man, send me your jersey. I'll hold that sumbitch up too." But, yeah, nobody had a big big deal about it. I had told Coach Holmgren the same thing. I said, you know, I'm going to wear this. And he said, oh, you know, do what you need to do. The only guy that was really upset was Fritz Schirmer, our defensive coordinator. I said, Fritz, you're only pissed because we beat you. He was the defensive coordinator for the Rams when we went to the Super Bowl. I said, that's the only reason you're mad, Fritzy. But he's the only guy that really said anything about it.
Jim, we've been captivated by ESPN's documentary on the Bulls, four episodes in. They're running two. I don't know if you've seen the first four episodes, but it's bringing back a lot of memories. And you guys were at the height of your powers when Jordan got here. How much time did you spend with Jordan and around the Bulls? I'm sure there have got to be some good stories in there.
Well, I got to play a lot of golf with Michael. Mm-hmm. Actually, he used to come over to the house. We played some pool. You know, we hung out a little bit, not a whole lot, but I enjoyed going to their games. I mean, watching what they did was special. I mean, those guys were pretty unreal. I haven't seen any of those things yet. And a couple of buddies of mine have told me you ought to tune into that. It's pretty good. So, but I said I kind of remember most of it.
It's very good. I think you would enjoy it. What were the stakes like when you and Michael would tee it up?
Well, usually $100 Nassau. That was about all I could afford at the time. You know, playing for the Bears, I didn't make a hell of a lot, so I had to supplement my income somehow.
Did you win?
I won some, I lost some, but you know, I remember one time we were playing up at what the heck was the name of his course up there in like Mundelein or something, but we had our $100 Nassau going, and I've got them down maybe three bets, maybe four bets on the front side. I was playing pretty good that day. And I tee my ball up on 10, and before I take a swing, he said, all right, I'll play you this side for $1 million. And he was dead serious. And I said, you know, I'd love to do it because the way I'm playing right now, but I said, somehow – You'd pull it out, and then my kids don't go to college. So, no. I said, you want to keep up in the hundreds? That's fine. But I'm not going. I said, I don't even have $1 million. How am I going to lose this?
So, $1 million.
Yeah.
That's amazing. It's crazy. You know, with this whole documentary on the Bulls basically is about how it was broken up, Jim, and that's something I thought was horribly absent in the ESPN 30 for 30 on you. I had a couple of problems with the Bears documentary of the mid-80s, the Super Bowl Bears, because that's as big of a part of the story to me, guy who lived it, as anything, was the contempt players had for management. I mean, it was apparent as before the Super Bowl was over, when Ditka doesn't let Peyton score a touchdown. Maybe that was the beginning of the end. But I don't know how in the world you do a documentary on you guys of the mid to late 80s and not include that, because it's a huge part of the story.
Well, there wasn't a whole lot of happy guys as far as their salaries are concerned. I mean, it was always a struggle to get, you know, a little bit extra here and there. You know, Ditka left Chicago when he was a player because Halas didn't pay him. Mm-hmm. And now to come down on us for guys, you know, I remember Richard Dent was sitting out a little bit. And then, of course, Todd Bell and Al Harris, what happened to them? You know, he kind of forgot what he was like as a player, I guess, when you become a coach. And, you know, he didn't understand why guys were sitting out. I'm like, he left because they wouldn't pay you. I mean, what's the difference here? So, yeah, there was not a whole lot of love lost between the management and the players, for sure.
Ditka also, I remember suggesting after the Super Bowl, you guys don't burn yourselves out with endorsements. And that's all he did. I mean, maybe it was also he could get a piece of it. And then when Flutie comes in, I wonder what was the real thing that Wilbur Marshall going to the Redskins and Plan B free agency. What was the biggest event that really set you guys off against either Ditka or McCaskey?
Well, I mean, bringing Flutie in that didn't help the situation at all. You know, I had nothing against Doug Flutie. I don't really know the guy. I've never hung out with him. what upset me was that we had two guys that had been in the system, had played and won ball games for us, and they weren't getting a shot. And I didn't understand that. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they wanted to get rid of me in 86, before 86, after my book came out. I guess McCaskey was a little upset. So they were trying to trade me then, and Dickens said, no, I don't have anybody that can play, is the story that I heard. So, but then when they brought him in and let him play before Steve Fuller or Tom Zach, that's when I was vocal about it. I said, hey, you know, these guys have been loyal here. They've done whatever we've asked, and they're not even getting a shot. I couldn't understand that. Steve Fuller beat Washington in Washington in 1984. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he played in the league a long time. He knew what he was doing. And T-Zach was up and coming. So, I mean, it was crazy.
What was in your book that upset him the most?
McCaskey?
Yes.
I can't remember what I said. Yeah, I haven't read it. So I haven't read it for 40 years. So, I don't know what it was. I just remember the only meeting I ever had face to face with the guy, and he was telling me that, you know, we don't really mind if we don't win every year as long as the stadium is full, and you don't tell your players that. I mean, we're here.
He said that directly to you.
We've only got, you know, according to the averages, 3 or 4 years to make something, and to tell your players, oh, we don't care if we win every year. I mean, I don't want to be a part of that organization.
I was hoping when Michael was taken out of power back in 99 after the Dave McGinnis fiasco, it would take on a different feel with Ted Phillips, but it really hasn't. And I know it to be true that on his deathbed, literally, Walter told Matt Sui, don't let him in. And that him was Mike McCaskey. So Matt had to go to the front door and say he doesn't want to see you during his final hours. And I would suspect you think that's representative of a high percentage of people who played for him in the 80s and 90s.
I don't know of any friends that he has, but... No, he hasn't been a thought in my head for a long time. Thanks for bringing that up.
sorry, Jim.
Jim, what?
Ruined ahead, my Jim. Sunny day.
Oh, no. we don't want to do that.
Do you feel better about this group now with Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace? You got reason to be encouraged about the way your Bears are looking?
Well, I got to meet Coach Nagy in at the 100-year, whatever that thing was, last summer. And I was very impressed with him. I know he just came from the Kansas City staff, so we talked about Andy Reid a little bit. And I like what they're doing. I think they're, you know, they got some unbelievable talent. And I think with the acquisition of Foles this year, I think that's going to steady the offense. And, you know, it's yet to be seen if he, you know, if the competition works out, but you know, at least you got a veteran guy that's, you know, he won a Super Bowl. Hell. So, you know, I think they're going to be fine.
Jim, I'm curious, as we're talking to Jim McMahon for another couple of minutes on the McNeil and Parkin show, for years you had lobbied the NFL to change its stance towards marijuana, crediting it, as I read, with helping you get off of opioids. They've changed the stance. They've changed the stance finally. I'm wondering if you're happy with the current policy.
Well, I think you had to. I mean, how can you tell somebody what they can and cannot put? You know, they're always telling you you have to be responsible for what you put in your own body. I see these guys getting fined and something for taking a cough medicine that had something in it. You know, some ridiculous whatever it was. And here, you know, we've been lied to for over 100 years about this plant. Our government's lied to us. You know, they've had a patent on it for 75 years. They know it's good. But Big Pharma kind of runs this country. Whatever Big Pharma says, and the NFL is, and Goodell, they're huge Big Pharma people. You can take all the pain pills you want, but then you can't sleep. And then you can't, you know. And to say you can't go home in your own house and smoke a joint so you can go to sleep, that's crazy.
But how did marijuana help you?
I'm glad they finally finally changed the stance. Well, I've always been an advocate of it. I've been since 1973. I think I enjoyed my first joint. So I've always enjoyed it. I've since done a number of cannabis conferences around the country, and I usually speak with a Dr. Uma Donabalan. She's a Harvard-trained doctor that's out of Boston, and we actually did a convention over in Jamaica. Everybody thinks it's legal in Jamaica. It's not legal in Jamaica. It's just for the Rastafarians, it's legal. But I think that stance around the world is changing because they see the benefits of this plant. We have a system in our bodies for it. I mean, we have receptors up and down our spine and in our brains specifically for this plant. So why is that there if we're not supposed to be using it?
Yeah, well, you're talking, you know, to a couple advocates of it, with or without pain, advocates of it. And it's the hypocrisy is remarkable that it has taken this long to see people even being open-minded to the change. And you remember Nick Nolte in North Dallas 40 when they take pictures of him smoking a joint, and he's like, you kidding me? You guys give us harder stuff to get out of the effing locker room than this.
That's still the most realistic football movie I've ever seen. So
yes, it still stands up, doesn't it, Mac?
How the players get treated, you know, like you said, they follow them around, they spy on them, they put them in situations where they can, you know, they got you by the. So I'm glad to see that, you know, not only the NFL's changing, but I think the whole country and the world, basically. I mean, this stuff's an anti-inflammatory. It's a neuroprotectant. So if anybody that should be taking this stuff is people that hit their heads a lot. it actually helps protect the brain. So, you know, the hypocrisy is finally going to be over for everybody, I hope.
I don't know that everyone understands, too, what it was like in your era of football in terms of how prevalent it was. Hey, just pop these pills. Like, can you paint a picture of what it was like in a training room or a locker room in terms of easy access to opioids?
Oh, yeah. There was usually just, you know, bowls of stuff out. You know, this is an upper, this is a downer, this is this does that. You just take whatever you want. And then, the big problem, you know, when they really started cracking down is when I think it was back in the early or mid to early 80s or 90s when Don Rogers died and then Lenny Bias. Mm-hmm. That was a totally different thing. That was cocaine related. And then so they stuck, you know, they stuck everybody with the marijuana and everything but opioids you can take or you couldn't take.
Right.
Which was nuts.
Yeah. Jim, we remain friends here at the station with Hilgi and Thayer, and I texted both of them. I said to Hill, I said, tell me something, you know, give me something about Jimmy Mack. And he said one of his pet peeves was, and he said he thinks this is the reason you and Jay got along so well, is that you hated centers with wet asses. And Jay was very accommodating in that regard, that he's not much of a sweater, unlike his predecessor, Jerry Fontenot. Is that accurate? Is that a correct memory on his part?
Well, he's not much of a sweater because he didn't move much. So, and no, I take that. Hilgi was great. But he did wear an extra pair of shorts underneath his pants, which was very nice.
That's Whereas actually Tommy Thayer, though.
They tried to make Thayer a center one summer,
mm-hmm.
And there's a guy that sweats profusely, and he didn't have shorts on underneath his football pants. And the first snap that I took from him, I got sprayed with crack sweat, and it was not good. So I said, "Hey, you got to go get some shorts on, or I'm never taking another snap from you."
That's actually an NFL, probably a college thing too. I saw it in Hard Knocks. Carson Palmer, when the Bengals were featured a few years ago, he goes, "Man, you're moist," and then he smells his hands.
Yeah, it's not good.
And he says, "You need some shorts, dude." He actually took his hands to his face.
I got an even better story from the when I was in San Diego. I get a rookie center to start one of the games, and he's also on the kickoff return team. So that we're getting the opening kickoff, I don't know what happened. We're getting the ball on the 20, right? So I'm running out to the huddle, and the center grabs me, and he says, "Hey, if your hand starts to stink, it's because I just crapped my pants." I turned around. I burned a timeout before the game even started. And I walk over to the bench. Dan Henning's our coach, who had just come from Washington, the Redskins, and they don't believe in the shotgun, or they didn't at the time. So we didn't have the shotgun. And he's just cussing me up and down. "What are you burning the timeout for?" And I says, "Coach, this is exactly why we need the shotgun. Your boy just crapped his pants, and I'm not sticking my hands in there until he freshens it up a little bit." So he had to leave the game. He didn't even go to the locker room. They just stood on the sideline with a bunch of trainers around him and towels, and he cleaned up as best he could. But my hand stunk for a month after that game.
Would that be Courtney Hall?
Jinx. That would be.
Courtney Hall.
He's a rookie, Jim. He's a rookie.
Yeah.
Well, I know. And then Courtney was a great center, but it's just one of those things that just still sticks in my mind. I can't forget it.
Yeah,
I imagine.
Because people always ask me, "Oh, did they ever fart on you, do this?" I said, "Oh, yeah, all the time. But the worst was this." They love story.
That's incredible. We had one of the first Score Stories guests when we were doing this segment to just have people tell stories was Ron Rivera. And he told some great, you know, training camp stories with Hampton and, like, sneaking out and boozing during training camp because he would only have to practice once a day. Like, when you think about that era of Bears football and, like, the work hard, play hard, partying mentality, what's the first story on the partying side of that you go to in your mind?
Oh, boy. Every Thursday night we seemed to have a good party. But that was during the season. That was me and the offensive lineman would go out every Thursday night. And whoever turn it was to buy, they would pick the spot. It could be downtown or it could be up in Lake Forest, wherever it was, Highwood. And then we'd all show up and then have our dinner. And then sometimes guys would go home. Sometimes guys would go out for a little more. So those were fun nights. But then Fridays was always the worst day of the week for practice, because Fridays was always short yardage and goal line, and every team session we had was always live. So there was never any buddy, you know, sessions. It was always, "This is going to be live, so you better strap it up and be ready to get hit." Buddy was always telling his guys, "Don't hit number 34 and don't hit 9. They never hit 34. They popped me a few times off. But that's how we were at practice. I mean, I think people always ask, "Why didn't you guys win more than one Super Bowl?" I said, "Well, I think we got tired for one." I said, "When you're beating the crap out of each other for 3 days a week, and then after practice you run to death, and then by Sunday, Sundays used to be our day off, because after practice against those guys all week long, Sundays was kind of easy. But, you know, that takes its toll after 3, 4, 5 years. And that's what happened to us, I think.
You know, regarding those Thursday nights, Thayer said to me a few years ago, he said, "Man, you guys are lucky in media. Fans are lucky that social media weren't around back then, because it all would have been a secret." And I said, "That's BS. You think you guys love, especially you, McMahon, you guys loved being the Rolling Stones in shoulder pads. I don't think Twitter or Facebook would have changed your behaviors one bit."
No, probably not. I think, everybody asked me, what do you think would have happened if you guys would have had that Facebook and all that back then? I said, probably a little more jail time and probably a few more divorces. But other than that, basically the same.
Jim, this has been an absolute pleasure. Our audience on social media and our text line is absolutely loving it. We could go all day getting stories out of you, but please don't be a stranger to the show. We'd love to talk to you again, and all of the best.
I was getting a nice break from all these honeydews I got going on right now. Finally get to sit down.
Yeah.
Hey, well, anytime you need to get away, give us a call. No problem.
Hopefully not as sweaty as that rookie center in San Diego. Thanks, Matt.
Hey,
take care,
man. Before I go, I gotta get a shout out to my buddy Slim, who's actually beaten me at golf the last two times we played. He's a good friend of my son Sean's, and I know he's listening. But Slim, that's the last time you beat me, kid. Remember that.
All right. Very cool. Thanks, Jim.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.